With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Corner where we examine all things crime, whether it be on the page, on the screen, on the street, or in the courtroom. I'm Matt Coyle, author of the Cahill Crime Series, and I'll be your host for as long as it takes. My guest tonight, D.P. Lyle, is the award-winning best-selling author of both fiction and nonfiction books. Sunshine State is the third in his best-selling Jake Longley Mystery Series. Earlier books of the series were finalists for the Seamus Award for Book of the Year and USA Best Book Award, and included on the Mystery Magazine's Best Books of 2016. Doug is also the author of the Samantha Cody and Dub Walker Mystery Series. He is world-renowned. He's world-renowned for his forensic expertise, author of the McCavity Award-winning and Edgar Award-nominated Forensics for Dummies, which all of us dummies have read. As a forensic expert, he has worked with the writers of the popular television shows Law & Order, CSI, Miami, Diagnosis, Murder, Punk, and many others. He's a frequent speaker and radio and TV guest, as well as a valued forensic consultant to crime novelists, such as myself, and is the host of the podcast Criminal Mischief, right here on the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. He is also International Thriller Writers VP for Education and responsible for Master Craft Fest, and ITW's online thriller school. He has an undergraduate degree and a medical degree from the University of Alabama and has practiced cardiology in Orange County, California, for over 35 years. Welcome, Doug Lyle.
Thanks, Matt. Good to be here.
You know, that's only about half what I could have read, but, you know, we only have so much time.
Yeah, well, I make most of it up, so it's all right.
That's resume enhancement. So I got every job I have in the corporate sector.
You know what they say.
So the new book just came out, Sunshine State. Tell our listeners a little bit about the third Jake Longley, as I like to call, comedic thriller.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah.
Well, basically this time, Longley Investigations, Ray's company, or Jake's dad, and his partner Pancake get Jake and Nicole drug into investigating a really goofy premise that this serial killer in a prison in Florida named Billy Wayne Baker, who killed seven people, confessed to it. His DNA was found at every scene, and he's doing seven consecutive life sentences, confessing to all of them, being part of the deal, so he didn't get the death penalty. Okay, fine. So Billy Wayne's apparently found a benefactor, and he has hired them to prove that he didn't do two of the killings. And the hooker is that Billy Wayne won't tell them which two, because he says, well, you got to do it on your own, because if I guide your investigation, everybody's going to say it's bogus and it's BS. So you got to go out on your own and find all this stuff. That's what you're getting paid for, and I'm not going to say a word. And that way, when you find the truth, as I know you will, all I got to do is say, yeah, that's what happened. So it's a goofy premise and it's a goofy story, so that's great.
Billy Wayne Baker, of course, almost all, except for Ted Bundy, almost all serial killers do have the three names. So
exactly.
Just a thought for parents when you're naming your children, your sons, you might want to just not use the middle name when you're...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so John Wayne Gacy there. Won't be confused with the other John Gacy.
Right.
Yeah.
So, as I mentioned in your bio, you wrote some darker fare in the Samantha Cody and Dub Walker series. So where did Jake Longley come from, and what made you want to go for funny?
Well, always find humor everywhere. I think everything's funny. You know that. We've sat and chatted enough. Everything in the world's funny, you know, even the dark medical humor that isn't fit for public consumption, and cops are the same way, as you well know.
Yeah.
Everything's funny, and so I just always wanted to write something lighter, less dark, less procedural, less science, just more fun, slapstick. You can have happenstance. It loosely has to hang together because it's a fun story, you know, and you have room for hyperbole. And I've always wanted to do that, and I just sat down. I had this one scene in mind for the first book, Deep Six, and I said, hey, let's just start writing, see what happens. And here we are.
So do you find writing a comedic thriller more difficult than just writing a straight mystery thriller?
Not really. Actually, I find it easier. When you're writing a straight humor comes natural to me. So, you know, I grew up in a funny family and a funny neighborhood with funny friends. And so everything's funny and everybody could spin a yarn and tell a joke. Writing the forensic thrillers like Dub Walker, there's a lot of research, a lot of things got to be on the money. And that's a moving target because the science is changing all the time. So 10 years down the road, it may not be. These are more about characters, you know. These are more about characters that are goofy and having fun and doing stuff. But, oh, yeah, there are murders involved.
Well, speaking of characters, Jake is the main character, and
right.
He's a former baseball player who blew out his arm.
Right.
Pitcher. But he is, throughout the books I've read, and I've read all three, he is steadfast in not wanting to join the family business, which is private investigations. Yet
right.
Yet in each book, he seems to become embroiled in one of his father's
exactly.
cases. What's
exactly.
the justification for him to become involved in the cases?
Well, in the first one, Ray kind of badgered him into doing something, and of course he's watching this woman's house late at night, thinking that she's having an affair, and of course, you know, things go sideways. They don't work out right because Jake always wins in the end, but he does it by hook or crook, and he kind of staggers to the finish line. And in this case, while he's there, the woman gets murdered in the house, and he doesn't even know it. So, and then that starts the story. That's how he met Nicole and everything. But it seems like it's Pancake and Nicole that always drag him into this because they're all gung-ho for this, you know, PI stuff. So they drag him into it all the time. He doesn't want anything to do with it. But as Pancake always yep. says, Nicole will go, and you'll go wherever she goes. You know?
Right. Pancake's his best friend. Nicole's his girlfriend.
Exactly.
Now, I did call Sunshine State a comedic thriller, and it has plenty of laughs to me, and it's been, you know, the last book of yours I read was a year ago, but to me it seems like the tone is slightly more serious in this book than the first two. Is that true, and is that because of the subject matter?
Yeah, I think it was the subject matter more than anything else because, you know, serial killers aren't funny, even though they...
Nope.
There's funny there, but they're not that funny. But Billy Wayne's a cool character. It had more stuff. It had more a convoluted plot line, so it had to make a little more sense for all the pieces to fit together. And so I had to be a little more serious with it. But I hope I was able to pull off all the humorous passages too and scenes, and especially between Jake and Nicole.
Yeah. Absolutely, and that's what, for me, would have made a difference, right, but apparently not for you. But, yeah, it was an interesting dichotomy where you do have the humor and you also have pretty straight-ahead mystery thriller aspects where there is. And Jake, at times, I don't want to give anything away, but at times use a ruse to try to get some information, the whole organization,
right.
Jake. And I like the fact that at times he questions, you know, what they're doing. I thought that
right.
was
is it fair?
That raised the level of the stakes. So it wasn't a throwaway laugh type of thing. It was like, well, you know, people, these are real people.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted that. I wanted him to have that kind of depth, so that. You know, he wouldn't just be a comedic character completely. They didn't have some kind of heart and soul.
Right.
And I think he does. You know, Jake's gift is that people like him, and he likes people. So,
yeah, I'd say it definitely comes across.
Yeah.
Fills him out quite a bit. So we've been talking about Jake, and he is we do read the book mostly through him as a first point of view, but you also have multiple third-person points of view in Sunshine
right.
State.
Right.
So why did you veer away from the – I don't remember if in your last book you had multiple points of view. So why did you veer away from the more traditional single first-person point of view? For
yeah,
P.I., no.
Well, all my Dub Walker books and all the Jake books have had the protagonist in first person and everybody else in multiple third. And I thank James Patterson for that. He kind of, you know, 20 years ago or more showed the way to do that, that you could do that and you could do it successfully.
Yeah.
Because it's immediate when you're in the main character, who is, you know, the person you're following. But it also allows you to step outside that character and add information and data and flesh out other characters and add suspense because the other
right.
characters know things that the protagonist doesn't know. That's a thriller. And so anyway, I God bless James Patterson. I think he was the first person I saw that did that a lot.
Yeah, I think Robert Crace does a little bit too. Some of his,
yeah, he does.
Pike books.
Yep.
But it does enhance the tick-tock aspect when you have the other forces that the reader can actually see.
Right.
You know, gives this somewhat blind first-person character.
And yet all the Sam stories and my new series that's going to be coming out soon are all multiple third. There's no first-person character in.
Well, just briefly touch upon this, because this is not going to be too much longer until this series comes out. So say just tell a little bit about it.
Yeah, I have this new series, the Kane-Harper series, Bobby Kane and Harper McCoy. And they're... were raised as kids. They were one. Harper was purchased at age two from a drunk woman, and Jake was. I mean, Jake, listen to me.
Man,
Bobby was picked up. Bobby was picked up abandoned in a Houston bus station by this gypsy family. You know, not Roma gypsies that hang around the South and go around con artists and second story people and you know doing odd jobs and whatever it takes to feed the family and keep moving. So they were raised by them until age 12, and then things happen. But anyway, they hook up later, and they were both had military careers. Bobby is basically a trained assassin, and Harper is a CIA black op operator, and they end up running back into each other on the other side of the world because they didn't know where each other was. And now they got a company that they're fixers, and they get hired by a retired Army general whose granddaughter has gone missing from Vanderbilt University, and... that's the first case, and it's called Skin in the Game.
And it comes out in October, right?
October, yeah.
Wow.
It's a little dark. Yeah,
you are churning them out. Yeah, we won't get into the title,
yeah.
Skin in the Game. People can have let
yeah.
their imagination run.
Yeah.
So, as mentioned before, you're widely known and referenced by many authors for your forensic expertise. And I had a thought just today that you might think about contacting Guinness Book of Records because I'll bet you've been mentioned in the acknowledgments of more books than any other human being.
Well, it does happen a lot. You know, God bless Lee Goldberg because he puts me in all the books, even if I don't help him. but yeah, you know, and that I appreciate that. I really do. I enjoy the questions that I get. I learn a lot.
So how did it all start? When you became the forensic expert, the people would come to you?
Well, way back in the day, many, many years ago, Jan Burke was president of the Southern California chapter of MWA and Mystery Writers of America, and their newsletter, she said, is a little thin. Would you write an article for me? And I said, sure. What about on how the coroner times death? She said, fine. So I wrote this article called Timely Death that talked about the major things that they used in the first 48 hours, yada, yada. So, she said, well, we ought to do a question and answer thing. So we started doing a question and answer thing. And that plus going to conferences and people wanting to know about poisons and gunshot wounds and dead bodies and stuff. And so I kind of self-educated myself and started answering those questions. And it just, you know, it just took off.
And then you and Jan went on to do a radio show for 3 years or so?
Yeah, about 3.5 years. We did 70 shows, Crime and Science Radio.
Wow.
And, yeah, and we had some great people. That we interviewed the experts in the fields of, from, you name it, any field of law enforcement and forensic science. We had them on there. We had 70 different people. Then we ran out of friends and had to shut the show down.
I would have run out of friends after if I just interviewed friends on this show, I'd have two shows. But you know, I was
those
looking
ones
at your
that acknowledge website. You mean, yeah.
That's well, one. So I was looking at your website, and actually, people can they still download those? Can they still listen to those?
Yes, the episodes
from that show. There's gold
if you go,
in
if
there.
If you go to my website, there's links to all those radio shows. They're all on iTunes and other places, and you can actually listen to them on my website because the MP3s are there, and you can listen to all these interviews. And they're fantastic stuff.
That is
these guys are smart.
Mystery writer goldmine right there.
Yeah.
And the one thing I don't really like to schmooze my guests too much, but you've helped me. Before I had an agent, was anybody, not that I'm anybody now, but you know, years before I was published, I heard about you and I sent this guy an email, and sure enough, you responded within, I think, 12 hours or something. And it's so helpful to a lot of, to almost every mystery writer I know. And I just kudos to you for keeping it up after all these years and still being so responsive to it. It's quite a resource for the rest of us.
Well, you know, I got to say that the entire writing community is a very generous community. People give of their time.
It really
is amazing. It really is amazing. Yeah. And it's not as competitive as people might think. Everybody's trying to lift the boat. I really believe that.
It's universally known. I remember the woman who runs my writers group, Carolyn Wheat, years before I did. She was telling me, you know, this mystery community, because I just started to go to conferences and kind of make comments about how nice people were. She goes, that's the way the mystery community is. It's just, it's amazing. Everyone's so willing to help the next author. And in reality, we are competing for a very limited shelf space and readers' attention. And it is very cool. It's a cool deal. You are, I think I mentioned that you're still a practicing cardiologist.
Right.
You write a crap load of books. You have a podcast now again with authors on the air. So, but I'm guessing, and you started writing a long time ago. When did you start writing fiction, and how did you find the time? Because imagine that you were very busy with patients back then.
Yeah, I was much busier then than now, and it was probably, you know, 20, 25 years ago now. I always wanted to write books, but I never had the time. I had some stories in my head, but I didn't even know if I could do it. And so finally I decided, you know, I figured I'd do it when I retired. And I said, well, I'm not going to retire. So if not now, when?
Yeah.
And so I took some classes at UCI, University of California, Irvine, which is a great writing program in their extension program. Took a couple of classes there and then joined a couple of writers groups and just started writing. And, you know, you get better and better and better the more you do it and the more you learn and the more people you talk to and the more you see how other people do it. Read, read, read. All you writers out there, read, read, read. And, and then it just took off from there, and it's been a crazy ride.
I'm glad you brought up the writers group, because that was actually my next question, and by my limited math skills and looking at your website and knowing your fiction, I think you've written 11 novels and 6 nonfiction forensic books, and yet you are still in a writers group a large degree. Success. So could you talk about the importance of the group to you, speaking in writers groups, and why you think it's a great idea for anyone from any level of writing to get into one?
Well, a good writers group is worth its weight in gold. If you get in a bad one that has bad dynamics and not much help, then it can be horrific. I've been in one that kind of fell apart because it got crazy. But the others I've been in, like the third, fourth, and they've all been great because they're people who are, some are published, some aren't, but they're very smart, they're very dedicated, they write good stuff, and they give great critiques. And you know, you don't get to bounce your stuff off anybody else. You just don't. It's a lonely, you know, it's you and the computer and the cat, you know, and the cat don't care. And so you have to have someone to bounce stuff off of, and they will find the simplest things that you say, oh, of course, why didn't I think of that? And it evolves your book and makes it better and better. So if you can take the time, we only meet for like 3 hours twice a month, and usually 4 or 5 people will read something, and we keep it pretty succinct. But you get a lot of opinions of people who read a lot and write a lot. So I recommend it, you know, if you can find the time to do it.
Absolutely. I think that particularly in writing mysteries where you're dealing with a plot and you're trying to give away, you're trying to give, be legitimate with the information you give out. You're trying to hold some back, but you can, it's so, in the book is in your head. So I think it's really difficult to know if you're giving too much information or enough. And just every day is that you can miss stuff for a year on your book that someone else looks at and goes, oh, this right here. Curious about the group. Is it all mystery or do you have a variety of genres?
A variety, but I think most of them are mysteries. One of the people in the group is writing a memoir type thing now, and also writes articles for magazines. And she'll bring some of those in. They're very humorous. One of them writes humorous short stories. So we have an eclectic mix, you know. but that's good. Writing is writing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's actually a benefit to have a variety of genres, if possible, in your group, because they may pick out things that everyone else kind of glosses over that the reader is not going to gloss over. I found that recently in the group I'm in now. I don't know if I mentioned the monk books you wrote, but you wrote a couple of, what do they call this, tie-in books?
Yeah.
To the series Monk.
Yeah,
and I know you. No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I say I know you really enjoyed the process, so I want to know if you want to talk about it all. Give any insight
on Hollywood
stories.
Not so much. It's interesting. Actually, the Monk books were written by Lee Goldberg, and he got me into writing the two books for the Royal Pains.
Oh, for
the
Royal Pains.
Yeah, and they called media tie-in novels because you write them based on, you know, TV shows or movies or whatever, and this is TV shows. And so I had the characters, and I had the Malu, you know, the Hamptons and all that stuff, and I knew it was comedic. And so this was when I decided, you know, to cut my teeth on some comedy because it is funny stuff. And it's fluff, and I don't mean that derogatorily, versus hardcore fiction where you know, science and crime scenes and all that stuff. This wasn't that way. And it wasn't even hardcore medicine. You know, it was simple stuff. But it was mainly situational comedy. Funny stuff happens. You know, to Hank and Evan and all the crew. And so it's the first two books I wrote that I didn't outline. And so, first of all, I learned to write fast, I learned to write funny, and I learned to write without an outline. And so from those three things, I got out of writing those Royal Pains books. And from that, the Jake Longley series evolved because I realized you don't need a net. You don't need a net. Just write.
Well, that's the way I go about it, which I would not recommend to anybody because, for me, it's a mess. But I find it interesting that when you were for Hollywood, where don't they want sort of an idea of what the hell you're doing, that you didn't use an outline?
That what now?
I find it interesting where I would think for Hollywood, they kind of want to know where you are, and you did not even use an outline. I think that's kind of goes.
Yeah, no, I sent them 30,000 words. You know, when I got to 30,000 words, I said, that is where I am right now.
Okay.
And they said, oh, okay. Well, kind of. Second book, they got a little, anyway, it was goofy, but that's another story. I wouldn't do it again, but I learned a lot, and I'd appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, they're fun books. They are fun books because that was a fun TV series. Even though the medicine was wrong, it was a fun TV series.
So did they consult you for the medicine on that show?
Oh, no. I had nothing to do with the TV show.
Okay.
Nothing to do with the TV show. No, none. I mean, they did a bronchoscopy on a guy sitting in his chair in the living room, really.
Did a what?
A bronchoscopy. This is where they take a tube and stick it down inside your lungs and wash it with water and do biopsies and crap. And they did it on a guy sitting in a chair in his living room.
Isn't that how
it's
done?
And I said, no. You get sedated 9 ways from Sunday and they hope you don't aspirate and die. What do you mean? And so, and this guy didn't even cough. But it's...
Did they use a pen, like the empty container of a pen?
No,
I'm pretty sure I've seen that before, and I'm not sure if the guy was standing up.
Yeah, the point is the science was not important in that series, really.
Right.
Sure, Hank was a doctor. He made great diagnoses and great treatments and stuff, but it was all kind of glossed over because that wasn't what the show was about. It was about the interaction of the characters and the fun. And so I just took it that way, and I enjoyed it. You know? That's kind of the way I take the Longley things. It's not about hard science and hard crime. It's about characters having fun.
Yeah, but I think in the state there is it's legitimate hard crime there for sure. And, of course, you know, there's some medical stuff that you obviously know what you're talking about. So you said firm, and I apologize to you and Lee for saying Monk at Royal
Haynes.
No, that's
okay.
Which I knew. Lee might get mad at me, though.
I don't think so.
So from that, so now going forward, you're not outlining, whereas before you did?
Not exactly. And that's 90% true. I use a program called Scrivener. And,
oh, you do?
So you create the scenes, you know, on the left side. And so sometimes I'll say, okay, I got this going. So if this happens, it's going to go here, here, and here. So I may open up files for the next four or five scenes and then write a one sentence, you know, in the other little side. And then so now I kind of got, but that may get changed. But at least while I'm thinking about it, I know after this, I got to go here, I got to go here, I got to go here. So bang, you know, person goes here, person goes there, whatever. And so, but that to me, it's not really outlining. It's just kind of having some scenes in your head, a few scenes ahead of time. Yeah.
Much different than outlining. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've heard about Scrivener, never use it because to me, it seems too complicated for my brain. But how long have you been using it?
Oh, 10 or 12 years.
Really?
Yeah, it's the greatest writing program ever made. It's simple. I probably use 10% of it, and that 10% is pure genius, and it works. It's so easy because you can jump from scene to scene to scene, and if you color code them, you know whose point of view each scene is. So you say, wait a minute, when did Jake and Nicole talk to the drug dealer? And I look back and go, oh, there it is. It was in chapter 14. I click on it and it appears. Right in the center. And so I can say, okay, let me read that. Okay, now I can go back to where I was. There's no scrolling. There's no hunting. There's no nothing. You just skip from scene to scene to scene. It's amazing. It's a great program. Yep.
Scrolling is one of my favorite things. I wouldn't want to get that out.
Gives you time to daydream, right?
I don't. The fact you're saying how easy it is to use and how you rave about it makes me anxious because then I think I need to. I should at some point check it out, and then that'll screw me up.
Yeah, it's like $35 or something, and it's wonderful.
That's a deal.
And it lets you put it on as many computers as you want to put it on, yeah.
And then, but is it connected to Word? Does it come out in a Word document?
No, it comes out in their thing, but they do have an export file, so an export function where you can export it into Word or Pages or a lot of stuff. I cut and paste into I use Pages because I'm a Mac guy, and I always at the end of each writing session copy the entire manuscript and paste it into a file that I keep dated because I just like everything I've written in two different programs.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
just in case one of them goes sideways.
Which has happened to everybody.
Exactly.
So, if you can, briefly talk about your – first of all, you did a radio show for over 3 years.
Yep.
It's like 70 episodes. What made you want to get back into that format? I know it's a podcast, so very similar. And tell us why and what about Criminal Mischief.
Yeah, I enjoy doing that, and I enjoy podcasts and radio. I think it's a fun medium. I grew up on radio. I'm so old. I listened to radio before we had a TV. But
me too.
And then Pam Stack and I were talking at Thrillerfest last year about it, and she said, "I'd like you to do a show. Why don't you consider doing that?" I said, "I'd love to." I said, "I've been thinking about it too, doing some podcasts." And she said, "Well, it's perfect." She said, "Well, let me know what you want to do." Well, you know, Jan and I did what you do, rounding up guests and, you know, herding the cats and all that stuff for 3.5 years, and I wasn't sure I wanted to do that again. So then I said, you know, I got enough to talk about, so I'll just call it Criminal Mischief, the Art and Science of Crime Fiction. So I can talk about writing, and I can talk about forensic science, and I can talk about medical science, I can talk about books, I can talk about whatever I want to talk about. And so basically I just record 20 to 30 minute podcast, and I put up a couple a month, and just talk about writing and talk about crime fiction and talk about science. And there's always some topic coming. I did one maybe a month or so ago on fentanyl. What it really is, how it works, why it's dangerous, why cops, you know, like to wear masks and gloves around it, because it'll kill your butt dead in a heartbeat, you know. And these kids are throwing it around. They're bringing it in across the border. And they're throwing it around like it's candy. And, you know, people are dying right and left. It's a treacherous narcotic. It makes heroin It makes heroin look like cotton candy.
Right. Do you remember the this is a San Diego murder, real true crime. American
Kristen
Beauty.
Rossum.
Right.
Kristen Rossum. Yeah,
that,
famous case. Everybody needs to look that up and read it because it involves fentanyl, and it's a wonderful story. There's been books written about it. But Kristen Rossum, R-O-S-S-U-M,
right.
or just the American Beauty murder. Yeah.
And a friend of mine, you probably know her too, Caitlin Rother, wrote a very good book about it, although I can't remember.
Excellent book. Yes, I read it. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre story.
That was like, what was that, like 20 years ago, fentanyl? I never even heard of it, you know, until that.
Yeah, it was fairly new on the market then, you know, fairly new on the market then. But it's extremely powerful. And just, you know,
So we talked a little bit about the next book. Are you – so you've got – is there a Jake book in the shoot? Are you working on
it? Yeah, the fourth Jake book is called Rigged, and it takes place in the town of Fairhope, Alabama. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you've never been to Fairhope, go to Fairhope. They call it the Carmel of the South, but it's on it hangs on the edge of Mobile Bay facing west. It's not far from Mobile and Gulf Shores, where Jake lives. It's not far from there. And great sunsets over the bay, and artsy town with a great bookstore. And it's a pretty high-dollar neighborhood, but it's got, you know, great little restaurants and bars. It's just a fantastic little town right on the water. And it's just cool. So I set it there, and it's called Rigged, and it'll be out next April.
Next April. Oh, you're moving up a month.
Yeah, exactly.
Congratulations, I get pushed back. how can people find you on the World Wide Web?
dplylemd.com. So it's dplylemd.com. And if you go there, you can connect to all my books and my blog and my podcast and the radio shows. And you can link to all that stuff there.
To the gold and all those, and both the podcasts and all those radio shows for authors or for medical forensic information. Really a great resource and that lives on. Plus your, I don't know if you're, are you still doing, I know you've helped me some forensic questions just of late, actually.
Yeah.
So you're still answering questions for authors that don't know anything.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I answered a couple today. So I still get answers all the time, questions all the time. And you can do that through the website also.
Right. Great resource. Well, I'm much appreciated of coming on, and we'll talk to you. I'll see you, you know, down the road. We'll have you on when hopefully when the next book comes out.
Well, I appreciate it. You have a good day, and I'll see you soon, I'm sure.
You too. Thanks, Doug.
Okay. All right. Bye.
All right, folks. I'm not sure exactly when I'll be on next. It's going to be something in June. In 2 weeks, there's going to be the California Crime Writers Conference, so I won't be having a guest. Maybe the week after that. But I'm reading a book, and I need all the time I can to write, so it may be an episode once a month or maybe once every 3 weeks. But this is a Writer Trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and thanks for listening in, and check me on Facebook, and we'll find out what we're doing.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.